All right, Father, we just thank you for our time. Just thank you for the many ways that you bless us, even the simple things. We appreciate this time of year, the weather getting nice like it is, and just thank you for the opportunity to gather and worship regardless of what the weather is. And thank you for this time to take on a new subject as a part of our parenting, looking at and focusing on the relationship of the parents themselves in training the kids. And I pray that this will be a useful series and a useful portion of the series that we can learn to become better husbands and wives. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Working our way through that last series of topics that were kind of didn't fit in any other category, but didn't want to leave out. And we've looked at parenting teenagers. We've looked at relating to your kids as adults. We've been looking the last couple of weeks at being a grandparent, the joys, opportunities, and challenges of that. And now we start yet another topic, working well together with your spouse as you raise your kids. So you and your spouse share the responsibility of raising your kids. Duh, right? We all know that. But there's a consequence to that, and that is that to the extent that the two of you have harmony between you and work well together, you will do a better job raising your kids, and things will go well for the family as a whole. To the extent that the two of you are not working well together, or worse yet, in conflict with one another, the entire family will suffer for it. And it will be difficult, if not impossible, for you to do a good job raising your kids. This is just an observation. I think it's axiomatic, not disputable, really. But we don't often think about the impact that the relationship the two of us are having, husband and wife are having, on the whole family and how it affects the kids. So important. I've shared this story before, I'm pretty sure, but not in this context, so I'll share it again briefly. My wife and I, when we were having some difficulty with mostly with our oldest son and eventually daughter, went to a Christian counselor and wanted him to help us solve the problem we were having with our kids, which he did proceed to do. But then very, very quickly, he shifted gears and wanted to get into having us come in for marriage counseling. I said, whoa, 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 we're not having marriage problems, we're having kid problems. And he said, once you know something, he said, 99% of kid problems are a result of marriage problems. And it turned out he put his finger on some things in our relationship. I wasn't expecting that things to go in that direction because I wasn't thinking about the kind of conflict we were having conflicts that I wasn't even thinking about, honestly. I mean, I probably knew about them, but I never thought about the impact that was having on the family. So this is a big deal, and we want to make sure we get this one right. And we'll probably, as we've been doing, we'll probably dedicate a few weeks to it. I think it's worthy of that. So our focus in this section is going to be looking at ways that the two of you, as husband and wife, can develop and maintain a good relationship with one another and learn to work well together, especially in your efforts to raise the kids. And so we're going to kind of look at it more generally. We want the two of you to get along well together, to have a good relationship, even if you had no kids. But then in particular, that's going to come into play as the two of you begin to co-lead and co-rule in the household. So the first thing I want to try to persuade you of in this regard is the primary nature of your relationship with your spouse. Here's my assertion. Your relationship with your spouse is the primary relationship in the household. I've asserted this throughout the series, but I just kind of slipped it in. I want to really focus on it now. And I don't expect a lot of disagreement, but in case you hadn't thought about it, or in case you're not sure you agree with it, I'd like to try to persuade you of it. And if you do agree with it, I'd like to just underscore it and help you understand why this is an important thing to really understand and how it can affect your view of the whole situation. So here's some things I would point out. Number one, the husband and wife relationship is the original relationship that formed your household. At one time, your family, in the very beginning, however many kids you have now, was just you and your spouse. That was the family. That was the original. That was the beginning. Your kids are a byproduct of your relationship. A very important byproduct, but nevertheless, you are the origination. You are the beginning. You are the primary relationship. The husband and wife are both to be honored and obeyed by the kids. We've talked about that. So it's not just all every relationship within the family is all equal. The husband and wife are in a unique role within the family in that they occupy the position of authority. They occupy the position of honor. And so the two of them are special within the family. And then again, another obvious thing, but you might not think about it, especially at this stage. Once the kids are grown and move out, it will again be the final remaining relationship in the household. You started off with just the two of you. If things go as normally expected, and you both live long enough, your kids will eventually grow up and move out, and there you'll be, just the two of you again. And so that's something to keep in mind. A lot of couples get so preoccupied with the raising of kids, it's natural to understand how that can happen, that they forget that relationship is going to be there when the kids are gone. How often do we see cases, I think statistically, I haven't looked to see exactly what the statistics are, but I think statistically there are a lot of divorces take place at the time when the last kid moves out of the house, because suddenly you're faced with, this is stranger I've been living with all this time, and I've been so focused on the kids I never thought about it. Boy, you sure don't want to be getting to that level of that stage of your marriage and have that happen. But it can happen. It really can. Kids can really occupy you, and you can be really focused and be really busy, and the two of you just are like ships passing in the night. And that's a tragedy if that happens. I want to go on and continue to establish this idea. No matter how much affection and camaraderie you may have with any of your kids, it can never even come close to the level of intimacy that you should have with your spouse. So you're going to have a great relationship with your kids. We want you to have that. But it doesn't even hold a candle to the level and degree of relationship and intimacy that should exist between you and your spouse. I realize in some cases it doesn't. I'm hoping amongst us it's more common that it does. But just looking at the world in general, a lot of times kids come along, and I've heard of extreme cases where, you know, the husband and wife can have a very romantic relationship, and the kids come along. Suddenly the wife's not interested in that anymore. She's all focused on the kids. I haven't heard that happen with a husband before, but I suppose it could. But, you know, it can be a distraction. But the point is, there's a level of intimacy there. And I think the scriptures make us aware of this. For one thing, you're bound to your spouse by a covenant that the two of you made to be joined together for life. Again, right, we all know this, but that's a big deal. You didn't do this with any of your kids. You didn't sit down with each of your kids and make a covenant to be joined together with them for the rest of your life till death do you part, right? That's not how it worked with the kids. The kids came along as a byproduct of your commitment to each other. You all made a covenant relationship before God. That's what Proverbs 2:17 implies. And it's for life. That's, you know, when Jesus talked about the permanence of marriage in Matthew 19. Those are the passages I'm citing there. I don't need to turn to them because we've looked at those, but... So that's unique. There's a physical romantic side to your relationship with your spouse that obviously isn't there or shouldn't be there with your kids. And that's something that the scriptures command to us and recognize. And it's very, very important, a very, very big deal. And as the two of you become one flesh, you portray a special unity that the two of you share, and by way of application, portray the mystery of the intimate relationship between Christ and the church. So the scriptures see the relationship between husband and wife, exclusive of kids, as there's a oneness that goes on there. It's described as one flesh. Now, obviously, there's a physical thing that's pictured there, but I think that goes beyond the physical. I really do. And I'm going to just cite a couple of passages here, just briefly. We've got Jesus in Matthew 19. A man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. There's the quote. Of course, the quote all the way back to Genesis chapter 2, the way it was established from the beginning by God. God's the one who established marriage in this way. And it goes on and says, Jesus goes on and says, so they're no longer two, but one flesh. So they started out as two individuals, but they're joined together. Yes, they joined together on occasion physically, but it's a symbolism of a bigger unity. There's a unity there, or should be a unity there, with you as a couple. That's never said of you and one of your kids. That kind of unity is not talked about. It's not there. And God has joined them in such a way they're never to separate. We know it happens sometimes, but it shouldn't. And then similar to it, Ephesians 5. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and two become one flesh. Same citation from Genesis, only this time by the Apostle Paul as opposed to Jesus. And then Paul adds this. He says, this mystery is profound. And I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. So what I think Paul is getting at there is this union between husband and wife, this intimate union, symbolizes and portrays before the whole world the kind of union and intimacy that is to exist between Christ and his church. And that's the comparison that was used. He's talked about, you know, talks about the church being the bride of Christ, even in Revelation and so forth. So this is a thread that runs throughout Scripture. And it again shows us the profound nature of our union as a husband and wife. That's not something you can say about the kids. So I hope I've persuaded you, if anybody was even doubting, that your relationship is really important. That's not to say that it's not important to have the relationship with the kids. We talked about that throughout the series. But your relationship needs to come first. It needs to be at the top, as it were, and of greatest importance. And for what it's worth, it's in your kids' best interest for you to recognize and treat the parents' relationship as the most important relationship in the family. So you may feel like we're sort of shortchanging the kids, you know. Well, gee, you know, we're making a big deal out of our relationship. What about them? We're leaving them out. But actually, it's the opposite, I will argue. Because ironically, having a parent-centered home, one where the main focus or the importance is placed on the husband and wife relationship, having a parent-centered home rather than a child-centered home where the kids are seen as number one, gives the kids a greater sense of well-being and security. They really want that. You think about it. When parents are fighting with one another, or if they ultimately get divorced, what effect does that have on the kids? Oh, man, it just decimates. It's just, their world is shattered. Why? This is some other relationship out there, right? That relationship is very important to your kids. And so the opposite, I'm arguing here, is true, that for your relationship to be harmonious and to be smooth running, it's just such a blessing for the whole family. The kids feel that. They love that. They want that. Even though at times it may seem to work against what they're in their sinful nature, or they're vying to work one against the other. They'll try to split the two of you up. But really, in the end, they want the two of you to win. They want you to be together. They don't want to divide you, really. It teaches your kids that they're not the center of the universe. That's a good thing to learn. You know, we're all worried about teaching self-esteem these days. I don't think that's the most important thing we should be worried about teaching our kids. It will cause your kids to have greater respect for you as parents that will respect a good relationship. And it teaches your kid to have respect for others. Because, you know, when you require of them respect for your relationship and the privacy that you have in certain situations and so forth, that teaches them to learn how to respect something outside themselves. Great thing for kids to learn. And it will ultimately serve as a model for your kids to treat their future spouse with honor and respect. So you're modeling something that you hope will go on and be a blessing for them and for their family. So you're always thinking ahead, or at least you should be, thinking down the road. So all that to try to, again, persuade you of the value of your relationship within the family. So now we're going to shift gears here, and we're just going to get started on this because I want to try to give us time to have a good Q&A and so forth, but delve into this a little bit and talk about developing and maintaining a good relationship with your spouse. What are some things that go into that? Well, I believe it's important for you and your spouse to have time alone together on a regular basis. If you don't get together and spend time communicating, spend time enjoying one another, this is going to be a problem. This is part of what you do to value that relationship. This is how you go about giving it the priority that it should have. Oh, excuse me just a minute. I just remembered I have an article I want to pass out. I think Roseman's been coming to our class, and we just don't know it. This is in this week's paper. He talks about putting the parents first in the relationship. And so, like, even let me keep one of those. Oh, yeah. Although I know you'll have extra when we get done. I was supposed to remember to pass this out when I got to that last section. I forgot. So just read this for next week, and we'll go into that. He goes into more detail. What he focuses on, and again, secular perspective, I get it, but what he focuses on is the impact that it has on the kids for the parents to focus on one another. Okay. Now back to this. I'm sorry for that, for forgetting that. Okay, so it's really important for the two of you to make time for each other. And so I'm going to make some practical suggestions. Now, I don't have scriptures for this. This is just practical suggestions from Bob, if you will. Take it for what it's worth, right? But I want to open this up because I'd like to have some discussion about it and see what you all think about this. Am I being realistic? Am I even suggesting something you think is worthwhile? I hope you think that, but let's see. Okay, so first of all, I would say try to spend at least an hour or so every day where just the two of you, preferably alone, are together talking. Now, I realize that especially when you got little bitties, this is going to be a lot harder to do. But I think as your kids get a little bit older, and, you know, assuming you've trained them well and they can, you know, you don't have to be constantly micromanaging them, this should be doable. I know my own parents modeled this really well. You know, they did some things really well. They did some things not so great. We all do that. This is what I think they did well, because my dad would come home from work, and they had a little room in our house the way it was configured. It used to be he had an Arcadia door, you know what I'm talking about, a glass door. It kind of shuts and it kind of seals real well. And it used to be to the outside. They built a room outside that door, and they left that door there, so that when you shut that door, it kind of became like a soundproof room. You couldn't hear what was going on in there. You could see, and they could see in, so if it was something going on, an emergency, something like that, you could go wave, and they could, you know, open the door and talk to you. But they would sit back there, and I think they would take a glass of wine. You don't have to follow that practice if you don't want to, but the idea of relaxation, they would just sit back there, and they would spend an hour or so every day when my dad got home from work talking about whatever. I have no idea what it was that they talked about because we couldn't hear them, but they were just talking about their day, how things went, catching up. I just think that was a great practice. I really do. And Sandy and I weren't quite that formal about it, I don't think, but I think we I think we tried to do that. Now, there were times we didn't, and I think we suffered for it when we didn't. And especially if you got a mom that's staying at home. Of course, the husband, he's off. You know, he's, let's say you got a stay-at-home mom situation, the husband goes to work, is sort of the traditional arrangement. You come home, your mind's all occupied with work, and maybe even like if you're like me, all the crazy traffic on the way home. And, you know, you come in, your head's all full of stuff. Well, she's been dealing with kids all day, you know. And she's like, sometimes, you know, maybe. You know, you'd like to think that she'd come home, she'd be all calm, and everything would be in hand and under control. There are those days. But honestly, right, there's days when things are just going crazy. And so she's like ready to explode maybe at times, and you're all preoccupied. You know, so the two, you need to reconnect, kind of unload your day, so to speak, in a constructive way, hopefully, and just catch up on what's going on with each other. You know, she can find out what's going on at work and so forth. You can find out what went on at home and so forth. And you can make some quick arrangements and stuff like that. And again, you can't do it forever. You've got a lot of things you got to do. But I'm just saying an hour every day or so would be a good thing. You can tell me what you think about that. But I don't stop there. I would like to suggest that you have a date night at least once a month, ideally once a week, where you arrange for a babysitter if that's needed, if you don't have old enough kids to watch the younger ones or whatever. You arrange for a babysitter to watch the kids while the two of you go out and do something fun and spend time talking and enjoying one another. So this is kind of a more of an extended situation than just the everyday talk. This usually involves an activity. It could be a simple activity. Sandy and I still do this. We don't even have kids anymore, and we still do this. And we thoroughly enjoy it. We have every Friday night at the Conley household is date night. That's just what we've arranged. And any of you who have tried to call me on a Friday night or something like that, you'll become aware of that real quick. It's like, well, hey, we're on date night. Got to get, you know, I'm not usually going to agree to Friday plans, although we can change that. We're not rigid. And, of course, when you have kids, you have to arrange, again, for babysitting. And there's ways to do that. Maybe you could let the parents watch them, or maybe you could trade off with a friend. If you get into affordability issues, like, well, we can't afford to pay a babysitter, okay. I understand that can happen. although sometimes it doesn't have to be all that expensive. But, again, there are ways to do it without even being any expense at all. The trade-off idea is one good one. Where two of you trade a date night. One has a Monday night date night, the other has a Friday night date night, whatever. And this just gives you a chance to go out. We usually start off with a stop at the restaurant. You know, we like to go out to eat because that's a good place to to have conversation. And you can do other things like, you know, going to a movie. Well, I mean, going to a movie is fun. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. The only thing about going to a movie is you can't get a lot of conversation over that. Of course, you could have one afterwards. Maybe you go out for coffee afterwards or something. You know, however you want to do that. But we like kind of eating out. And like when we were really poor, we were dirt poor when we first got married. And we first moved to Arkansas. We couldn't afford the restaurant, but we had a little burger place across the street that sold lemonade and onion rings for a buck and a half. I don't know what it was. It was really cheap. We could actually afford that meal. And our kids were old enough that we could kind of leave them on their own. We would walk across the street and pay the dollar or so for lemonade onion rings, and that was the only date we could afford back then. But it still worked. You know, it was fun. And that's the best lemonade and the best onion rings. I haven't had lemonade onion rings that good since. Frank Brandon's in Conway. I don't know if y'all ever heard of that. It was one of the old burger places that was in vogue back in the earlier time. And it still was hanging around. They finally went out of business. But anyhow, later we got to where, hey, we could go to Shoney's Big Boy and have, you know, dinner once a month. You know, and then we did the lemonade and onion rings. So I'm trying to recognize that you want to be responsible financially, and affordability is a big deal when you're a young married couple, you're struggling. I want to be sensitive to that, but still try to convince you that this is worth trying to arrange for, and there are ways around some of the financial difficulties that you might run run into. I would also like to recommend, so we got once a day, once a week, or once a month, your choice on that. I'd also like to recommend you take a getaway at least once or twice a year. And this is where you arrange, again, for a babysitter to watch the kids while the two of you spend extended time together in a place that you both enjoy. And we're going to line some things out here in a minute. But before we even get to that, we're talking about a little longer time period. Maybe a couple of days, maybe a week if you can afford it. But we've always, even to this day, we still are getaways usually about 3 days, 4 days maybe. That seems to be enough. It's just that solid block of time together, alone, the two of you. We usually plan to have it in a place where there's something like different, fun, enjoyable, whatever. We try to plan it at a time of year when the weather's nice and we can be out, and we like to walk together a lot. So that's just Sandy and I, but we like to do that even at home. And the babysitter. One of the biggest stresses, I think I may have mentioned this before, but again, not in this context. One of the biggest stresses in arranging the getaway was arranging for the babysitting. And that was left up to Sandy for the most part. And sometimes by the time she got the babysitting arranged, she said, "I'm so stressed, I don't even care if we go on our getaway." Now, once we got on it, she always liked it, and she always would reflect back and say, "You know, that really was worth it." But sometimes in the middle of that planning, because we had kind of a weird situation. We had like older kids and younger kids, and especially once the older kids became sort of delinquent, who wants to watch that, right? But you can't really leave them on their own. You can't trust them. Boy, that was tough. Kind of figure out unique arrangements. Some of you have unique arrangements that might come up with your kids. And you got to think your way around those. Who could we get to watch them? It could be, again, a trade-off with some friends. Sometimes what we used to do is, as the kids got older, they had friends they liked to spend the night with anyway. We would just divvy them up. You know, well, you like to spend the night over Joe's, so why don't you spend the night, a couple of days over Joe's? And Susie, you like to spend the day over Sally, why don't you spend a couple of days over, And we just let them stay with the, of course, arrange for them to stay with the families that they would tend to stay with anyways. That's one way. Or sometimes you can get some babysitters or just great babysitters. we had a couple. We would at times pay a couple or even a college student to come stay at the house and watch the kids that way. So different things you can do, or parents can be involved if you have parents in town. I realize that it's a challenge to try to arrange that. And of course, the expense. Now, I've had some people say, or one recommendation if you want a cheap getaway, is that you farm the kids out and you have your getaway at home. I can see that working, but although we just never did that, because number one, it seems like as long as you're at home, all those things around the house are calling you all the time. You can still think about doing the laundry. The phone still rings, and you still have to. Of course, you guys got mobile phones. What do you care? But back in the day, we had a home phone. We still have a home phone. the phone can ring, or somebody can knock at the door. Or things around the house just need attention, and it tends to be a little distracting. I really think it's better if you just get away. And I just find that getting in a different environment makes you think different. It's just human nature. I used to take business trips, and my wife was always amazed when I came home from a business trip. My mind was loaded with new ideas about new things. She said, "Where are you getting all these ideas?" was this an exciting trip? No, it really wasn't. It was just like a business trip. But like, I was in a totally different environment. I wasn't around my family, and it just freed my mind to think in a different realm. So maybe that we find that works somewhat as a couple, that you get away from your everyday routine, your everyday environment, and get out. It can be helpful. And what I would suggest is, I think I've talked about this in this class, and we actually had one night, I think, a bunch of us got together, and I laid this out more formally in more detail. If you'd like that later, I've got there's a book on it. I think it's by Bill Wellens called Getting Away and Getting It Together. we got this idea from Fellowship Bible Church when we went there. So you want to spend extended time together in a place you both enjoy, having a good time together, but that's not all. Rekindling your romance. You come back to this, and a lot of times in family life conferences, I know, emphasize this, why did you marry each other? There was a reason why you chose to give your life to this person. What was it? You know, and is that still true? And part of it involved probably a romantic attraction. And I'm not just being strictly physical there. I'm just more than that. All that's included in that. There's a specialness there. You don't want to lose that special feeling between the two of you. And you will tend to lose it in the everyday busyness of life. When you get away and get to enjoy each other, you start remembering what you really liked about each other and how much you enjoyed each other and why you got married in the first place. That's a good thing to do. And then having deep, extended conversations. It's one thing to have that 1 hour a day, if you can even pull that off, if you even want to agree to that. But it's another thing to have a conversation that could go on and on and on and on. And you can go out, and even while you're having lunch or walking or whatever, you can continue to have this conversation. There's not going to be any interruptions to that conversation. And sometimes Sandy and I sometimes have issues that, you know, most issues we can resolve in a fairly short conversation or a sentence or two, maybe. But there are some issues where we'll butt heads, or there's just something about the issue that's sticky and we can't get through it. And it just takes an extended time to talk it out. And sometimes in the business of life, it's hard to get that time. And so the issue remains unresolved, on the back burner, on the back burner, on the back burner. And this gives you a chance to get some of the back burner issues up to the front burner and get it cooked, you know, get it taken care of, perhaps. Now, there could be some stressful conversations. I'm not going to say that, you know, all of our conversations are sweetness and all that. I mean, a lot of them are, but sometimes they can get fairly intense, shall we say. But you need to do that. I mean, you need to have that time to get real. And then another thing, evaluating how things have been going in your life. It's a chance for you to sit and take a step back and say, how have things been going for us? It's one thing to say, what are you doing tomorrow morning? Or do you have any plans for tomorrow night? Yeah, so-and-so's coming over, or no, I agreed to go do this, or don't forget we got this appointment. That's one thing. But I'm talking about the big picture. How are we doing as a family? How are we doing as Christians? How are we doing at whatever level? How are things going for me at work? How are the kids doing? Just those broad level conversations, stand back conversations. If we don't make a point to have those conversations, we'll tend to not have them, and we'll tend to not think about those things, and we'll tend to not make possibly very important decisions that need to be made if you didn't have that kind of conversation. And then usually in response to that, making plans together for the future. So a lot of times we'll say, you know what? You know, we're seeing that there's a real problem with the kids in this particular area, and we need to do something about that, whatever it is you decide to do about it. And so, you know, we're going to make a plan to do that. When we get back, we're going to get on the phone, we're going to call somebody, or we're going to do whatever it is, make the arrangements, or maybe we're just going to we're going to announce to the kids we got a new thing that we're going to do, whatever it ends up being. I'm just being generic. I don't want to narrow it in on any one thing, because it could be anything. But that's where you make these plans. And again, you're in a place where you're relaxed, it's different environments, so your mind tends to go in different tracks. You're rekindling your romance. You're just doing so many things that are helpful when you do this. And it's a stressed arrangement, and it's a financial burden, or to varying degrees, depending on how crazy or fancy you want to get with it. But I think you'll think every penny and every minute is worth it if you try it. I really think you do. Especially if you try to be... You see, I'm not just saying go have a good time and come back. I mean, that'd be okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you just went and had a good old time and came back and didn't do much talking or anything like that, it wouldn't be as helpful as what I'm suggesting. I'm trying to suggest more than that. And also, I don't think it would be very renewing if you went away and had a real intense, focused conversation, didn't do anything fun, didn't have any time where you enjoyed each other and rekindled your romance. You might come back just blown out and worn out, you know? So we find that we kind of want to mix those things together a little bit. And what we usually try to do is, again, just practical experience, but like out of our 3 or 4 days, we'll try to have like 1 or 2 events, we call them, that we schedule. Whatever it is that we're looking forward to doing, we're going to go to the gardens and see all the cool plants that Sandy likes to see, or we're going to go to some show somewhere, whatever it is, in Disney World or SeaWorld or whatever you plan to do. But they have that thing you're kind of looking forward to. So if you do get intense, you do have these long conversations, you start to get a little bit tired and worn out, you can set it aside for a minute, and you go enjoy yourself and kind of relax again and get back to it. So it just kind of creates a little bit of a mix of things that make it all work together. That's just how I see it happening. All right, so here's where we get to interact and talk about all this stuff. I think we've thrown enough out there in front of you. Here's some questions to consider. Do you agree that your relationship with your spouse has a big impact on how well you're able to parent your kids? Can you give an example of where you've seen this? Do you agree with my assertion that the husband and wife relationship should be given priority over the parent-child relationships? Why or why not? And I hope I've established that. I even gave scripture for some of what I said. But you may not be fully persuaded. If not, I'd like to hear why. Do you think it's a good idea for you and your spouse to spend time alone together, as I've suggested? Remember, I suggested the different levels of a little time every day, a date night, and then a getaway. Different levels of spending time together. And do you think it's realistic to expect that you'll be able to spend this kind of time together? Am I being realistic in suggesting this to you? Or do you think, come on, Bob, get real. You don't know my relationship. You don't know our family. You don't know whatever. And if you think that, you know, we could talk about it. Or whatever. You could educate me. Okay, so there you go. There's some questions to think about, or if you got something else or something else you want to say, go for it. Yeah, I almost started the call on Stephen. All right, Stephen. Mr. Family Life.
So this is kind of like our thing.
We knew that.
Well, one thing that I just mentioned is for the getaway option, we do the Family Life Conference. It's called A Weekend to Remember. Mm. And it might sound boring, like, okay, if I'm going to get away with my wife, am I really going to go to a conference?
But yeah.
They do build in time, like there's a date night that's like they give you the whole evening for time together. They recommend, like if you did, there's one in Little Rock coming in May, actually. So if you were to do that, they would recommend you, you know, either stay at the hotel where the conference is happening or another hotel or something. But really, it is just an awesome opportunity to focus on your marriage and to have fun together and get away from the kids. So if anybody's interested in going to the one in May, just let me know. And it's a cost to it, but I think we can get you at least half price for that. But yeah, that's kind of the air that we breathe is focus on your marriage. And it's counterintuitive because you think, we've got these kids, that's our priority. But I mean, I can even think of as a kid, like if I was in bed and I heard my parents fighting or something, that was the least stable I ever felt at home. Was whenever I felt like, are my parents gonna divorce, or you know, like what's going on there? And then also you see kind of a continuing legacy, like with my parents. I've always wondered if they had if they had come from broken homes, I would think just based on their personalities and everything, I would think that they probably would not have made it. This is their 40th year of marriage.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to want to celebrate that big. But they both came from homes where there was no divorce, and I'm not sure where along the line there was ever a divorce. That makes a huge difference. So in terms of the legacy that you're passing on to your kids, showing them what it means and what it looks like to have a healthy marriage, that's just so crucial. And oftentimes you see where divorce, you know, it just kind of goes from generation to generation.
Yeah, not you're
every
right.
Case, but it does oftentimes because the kids don't see what a healthy marriage looks like.
That's a good point. Yeah, that we've talked about modeling in here and the importance of that, especially your parents. It does seem at one level, I mean, we'd like to think we're all so committed to the Bible, we would do it no matter what our parents did, and I hope that's true. It should be true. But at the same time, humanly speaking, you know, if your parents, if you saw them stick it out even through tough times, it really gives you a positive model. Or if you see them give it up and break up, and that becomes, in your psyche, however much damage and difficulty that caused you, oh, well, that's the way life is. And so now when you start having trouble with your spouse, you start seeing yourself going in that direction.
Yeah.
And I can see that, you know, being a problem. I'm thankful my parents stayed together all these years, and there was a time they were quite frank with us that they thought about giving it all up. And they got involved with some Christian teaching, and it influenced them. I think one of the things the teacher told him was, you know, he encouraged the idea of having dates. And he said, you know, when the two of you were not married and you wanted to attract one another, what did you do? Did you go over there and look your worst and act your normal self and you know, all this kind of stuff? I mean, there needs to be a certain amount of being real when you live together. I get that. But he said, no, you would put your best foot forward. You'd dress up. You'd try to look nice. You'd be on your best behavior. He said, why don't you start doing that in your marriage? He said, because if you get a divorce, what are you going to do? You're probably going to go get married again, right? And when you go to get married, you're not going to just instantly marry somebody. You're going to find somebody. And what are you going to do? You're going to put your best foot forward. You're going to dress up nice. He said, what? Just skip that step and do it with your current spouse. How about that? I thought that was a good practical way of talking about it. I liked it. But yeah, that's I like that, bringing that idea up. Yeah, Michonne.
Just to comment quickly that we're seeing, I think, more so now as Jackson starts to get a little older, and we're having, at least right now, he's a little bit of, you know, high maintenance because he's getting into everything and you have to get after him, and that kind of fills all the evenings and cuts down on when was the last time we actually got out of the house and had a date and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to see more and more now how easy it is just to slip into the routine of making the child the center of the universe.
Yep.
And I think it's a little bit maybe naive to think, oh, well, we can kind of act that way and kind of make the child the center of our universe while we're trying to raise them, and it's not going to wash onto them into them thinking or realizing they are the center of the universe. So, I mean, you have two factors there that, just to say, we're seeing that as much as we are trying not to do it, it's very easy to slip into the routine of making that happen.
Yep.
And so, you know, finding ways to fight against that, we're finding more and more to be important and be intentional to actually schedule things to happen and to schedule date nights when we can and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is, you're right, that's the default. The default pattern is to make the kid the center of the universe and not do dates, not spend time, not, it's not natural. It's very, I think even Stephen said that a minute ago about, you know, just the time you spend together. But it's if you don't make that plan, step back, and that's, this is the first way, and I'm going to give many others. This is just the beginning, but this is the, and I put it first because this is one of the primary ways that you make the kid not the center of the universe, is by making time for yourself and arranging for that child or children to be in a different place, out of sight for now, and the two of you are focused on your relationship. And that takes work. Takes effort, and you're right. If you don't do it, you'll slip into that, and you're hurting the kid and you're hurting yourselves.
I think a good way of teaching your children that you have a high priority of spouse is to let them see you making that impression to the public as well, that you have a high impression or have a high priority of your spouse. The Mike Pence thing this week, that I will not go out to lunch with a woman unless she's alone.
Oh, yeah.
Unless she's my wife.
Yeah.
Great policy. I have a similar one. So getting in the practice of honoring and speaking well of and showing affection towards your wife.
Yeah.
Or your spouse in the public in everyday life.
Yeah.
The kids are going to pick up on that as well.
Yeah, that is a good... who was it you quoted on that?
Well, Pence this week has received a lot of criticism.
Oh, gotcha. I guess I'm as much of a news junkie as I am. I missed that one.
Yeah.
The Billy Graham rule. Yeah, I had a similar rule, although I would go out on very rare occasions. But if I did, my wife knew about it. I said, hey, I'm going out with this lady at work. We're going to talk about work, and we're going to be at this restaurant, and you can come see us if you want to. So, I mean, it was accountability there. I never just kind of slipped out and, you know.
Right, I've got an eating out rule with all the meetings I have to have with other women. It needs to be in a group context or... It takes place at my office in the conference room that is all glass. And so I just try to get in that pattern and even let the kids observe as much of that as possible so they can see an honoring there. The other thing I'd want to say is this concept of love. They hear on TV, oh, I've fallen out of love with you. Putting such a subjective layer to what should be a word understood to be commitment and loyalty.
Yes.
So teaching proper definitions of words to our kids.
Yeah, we tend to focus on what should be the byproduct of those loving commitments, which is the good feelings and all that. And you want those to be there eventually, and of course they can't always be. And when they do wax and wane, you know, come and go, the glue that's holding the relationship together is that commitment, as you say. That's what real love is a commitment to your spouse in this case. Okay, still got a little bit of time left. If any of the rest of you would like to jump in on one or the other of these ideas or something that you wanted to bring up or see talked about.
Just to let them know that it's not Cinderella ending, that it's not happily ever after, and if you do get to the point where you have conflicts, don't panic, because everybody does, even those happy couples that you think are wonderful and never have any problems. And then you're surprised if they say, oh, well, we have marital problems or we have these struggles. Everybody does.
Yes.
And so I think that's part of the divorce thing, too, is thinking, oh, well, we don't mesh anymore, so let's go find somebody that we can live happily ever after with, and it doesn't exist.
That's a good word. Yeah, that's a good word. And people do get that impression, like, we're the only couple that fight. Because, I mean, who makes it real public that you fight? That's not usually something you want to hang out there.
Maybe even hiding the conflicts and, henceforth, the conflict resolution from the children. It's like, oh, well, if we're gonna disagree on this and we're going to have to go have a conversation about it, then let's go to the room where we can hash it out. And usually, what is that about? Probably more like, let's separate so we have an opportunity to yell at each other, rather than showing our kids perhaps that, you know, these things can be dealt with in a way that is probably a little bit more healthy.
So yeah, I could see a couple sides to that. I mean, certain kinds of resolutions definitely could happen in front of the kids so they could see it. Mm-hmm. I could also see that in certain kinds of things, not just that you want to yell at each other, but they might have to get into some things that the kids have no business really knowing about.
Sure.
And sometimes you have to be careful too, because if the kids see the conflict in its full orb, number one, you're stressing them too, but number two, they'll sometimes try to use it against you to pit one against the other. So it's something to be careful about with that. I appreciate the point that, you know, that to be able to show them how it works out, but sometimes you have to have that time. And sometimes, ultimately, you may need to ask for outside help. I think it's always preferable to try to work through your own situation as much as possible. As much as possible, carry your own burdens, like the scriptures talk about. It's not talking about couples, but just in general. It's a good rule of thumb. But sometimes we just need the help of others, maybe another respected couple in the church or a pastor or whatever, or, you know, in our case, we actually hired a counselor. We didn't do a lot of that. First of all, we couldn't afford it, but we only did it when we felt the situation had been pressed to such an extreme that we felt like we were out of options. And don't feel embarrassed about doing that. That's something to keep in mind too. And sometimes just having a relationship with another couple, where you have deep relationship couple to couple, and that's just an ongoing thing, even when there's no problems and you just enjoy time together. Then if something does come up, maybe they can help you see different perspectives. There have been times when even Sandy and I know we just reach a loggerhead on something and we just can't seem to get past it. So we'll bring in a trusted person or couple to maybe not even formally, just kind of sit down with us and just chat it up a little bit. And that's always been helpful. So that's something to keep in mind too. Don't feel like you're the... And we're going to talk a little bit more about conflict. That's something I have planned on the agenda in the next week or so, because that does... That does become a factor in your relationship for sure. But I'm glad Nancy brought that up, because I've had that impression. There have been couples, those guys never fight. If they don't, they don't have much of a relationship, I'll tell you that. But I don't know of any couple that really doesn't fight when it gets right down to it. And sometimes, you know, you've heard me tell stories, so I can't hide anymore. I have some crazy stories. But But Sandy and I generally get along very, very well. You know, we have a very harmonious relationship. But we have those days, we have those moments, and it never completely goes away. So, all right, let's see. I think we're about out of time, so let me close this up, and we'll let you all go. Father, thank you for our time together, for our conversation, and for this important topic. Thank you for authoring marriage. Thank you for communicating that in your scriptures, and help us to honor that. Help us to live that out in a way that really does show the intimacy and relationship that Christ has with his bride, and one that we'll enjoy for all eternity. We're picturing in advance that wonderful relationship that we all so much look forward to. And help us keep these things in mind as we make these efforts. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. You're dismissed.